Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vague. She's at Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. And a bit later in the program, we'll check the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's their ethanol production plant. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated. He is in Kansas City. It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Futures in Chicago finished like this for the day. September corn contract up a penny and a half. It settled at 356 and a half. December 369 up three quarters. And March corn up a half at $3.80 and a quarter. May futures up three quarters. July up a half. September a penny and a quarter higher for next year. And December, the harvest month of next year, up one and a quarter at $3.94 and a half. Soy complex September beans 8 cents lower today, $8.82 and 3/4. The settlement price November at $8.72 and a quarter. Down 7. January futures off 6 1/4 at 8.76, and the March at 8.78 1/2, down 5 1/2 cents. May down 5 1/4, July down 4 3/4, August down a nickel, and next year's November also down 5 cents at $8.64 3/4 of a cent. Bean meal futures up 50 in the September. October up a dime. It settled at $309.70. Bean oil in the October at $26.68, 25 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat in the September contract. That's the lead option down 3 1/4 at $4.62. December down 2 3/4 at $4.72 1/4. In July of next year, the harvest month for the soft red at $4.90 1/4, down 2 1/4. Hard red winter wheat down 3 3/4 at $4.48 1/4. December 4 1/2 lower at 4.72 1/2, and July down 5.05 1/2, down 4 1/2 in the hard red winter wheat. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract for the October at 142.80, down 67 1/2 cents. December at 144.85, down 92 1/2. October feeders at 198.30 finished $1.22 1/2 lower, and October lean hogs 35 cents higher at $69.12 1/2 cents. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby energies, crude oil, October contract, $44.39 a barrel, down $1.55. Ethanol futures at $1.46.09, that's 0.4 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB, October contract, $1.36.04, down 3 8/10. And diesel fuel at $1.54 1/10, 5 2/10 cents lower. Natural gas for the day at $2.65 1/10, also down a nickel and 9 cents in its case. Financials showing the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 16,368, 84 points lower. The U.S. dollar is up 0.023 at 96.01, and the gold futures at 1105, that's $1,105, are down $15.70. From the National Weather Service, we'll take a quick look at the weather forecast. It shows that this evening we'll have partly cloudy skies, a low of 57 degrees on a northeast wind at 6 miles an hour. It'll be sunny tomorrow. We'll go to a high of 80 degrees, a light and variable wind out of the east to northeast at about 5. That'll happen in the morning and then calm down as we make our way into Thursday evening. A 30% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy and 59. Winds will be light out of the northwest, and Friday a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 74 degrees, a north-northwest wind at 5 to 11, gusting to 15. Friday night partly cloudy for football and 49 degrees, and Saturday sunny and 67. That's right, just 67 degrees for the high on Saturday. By the time we get to Saturday night, clear and 47, pretty chilly for the low. Sunday sunny and 70. Sunday night will drop to 50 degrees, mostly clear, mostly sunny on Monday, and 77. More on the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes is here from Stewart Peterson to discuss the marketplace. Jackie, it's been interesting this week to watch the market, to think about the global connections to the export market, to the economy, to currencies, and maybe we can start in one of those spaces. But first, if we could take into context what USDA's numbers might look like for the crop production figures on Friday morning at 11 a.m., I would appreciate it. What is your take?
I don't think there's anybody who isn't expecting everything to go down a small amount, at least, if not more than that. Average guesses from an analyst standpoint are 13.484 for production on corn, 13.686 was the USDA. So that's a significant change, you know, 200 million bushels. Average guess is that we're going to go down about 2.3 bushels to the acre. And I'm very much in that camp from the standpoint that I don't believe USDA is going to be too aggressive, not just yet at this point in time. Harvested acres remaining the same. Beans down 3.8 from 3.9, so not real significant. Yield down 46.1, 46.9 is what it was before, so 8-tenths of a bushel. And no change in harvested acres, which, you know, that may or may not be right. I think when you look at the bigger picture, we do recognize that the USDA, that we did not meet USDA's numbers for corn. We met them for beans. And so there'll be a little bit of an adjustment there. But, you know, it's just such a wild card is what it is that we've got going on out there. You know, now when you look at the numbers for the world, of course, you know, because they're all connected, that would drop the world supply if the USDA does drop the U.S. corn supply. And, I think when you look at the bean supply all the way around between Brazil, Argentina, and even here, in fact, I have to tell you, Todd, I had a guy who has just been romping for how long that beans were so horrible, and he's in the Peoria area, and told me the other day that, boy, he'd take any bean he'd see right now because they are just beautiful. And so that's how much of a difference getting sunlight for a change makes to the bean crop. I tell you, I still contend beans are more like weeds than anything else. But, the bean situation is interesting. I think what we really have to recognize is that there's so many other things going on in the outside world. We know right now that Brazil's probably going to expand their bean acres 3-5%. Argentina steady to probably 2% gain, primarily because of the depreciation in their currency and the fact that the U.S. dollar has not fallen apart. I mean, you know, it's really quite amazing. It just continues to hang in there, and I think it will till we get past the next meeting and we find out, are they going to raise the rates or aren't they going to? I wish they'd just raise them, you know, like a quarter basis point and get it over with, you know, and so that the market could kind of find some stability from that standpoint. But in general, there's just so much on the South American scene. You know, we've got that election coming up in October, probably the worst possible time for us. And if they do get someone who does lower their export taxes, I think we'll see corn and beans on the market probably at the worst time that we could possibly want them to be there. And I did see a satellite company came out this morning, said they think the corn crop's going to be 13.3, by looking at it from satellite. But I've been around long enough to know that, you know, it's, satellite is okay from a projection standpoint. We'll still find out when we get in the fields. You know, that's going to be the key. And I think the bottom line is, you know, I don't know if you've noticed it, Todd, or not, but I have. Iowa has been very quiet. I mean, normally, if Iowa was having a bad crop, boy, you'd be hearing about it like you couldn't believe when you talk to people. Last year, when they were having a really good crop in a lot of areas, you hardly heard a word. And that's exactly what we're hearing this year. So, you know, that's probably – I see so many people say Illinois is the key. I really think Iowa is the key. And if Iowa has the ability to be able to come in with a really good production number, then you add on Minnesota and you add on Nebraska and South Dakota, North Dakota, and you could find that it isn't nearly as bad as what people think it is. But we won't know that for quite a while yet. And there's just so much that's happening in the background.
Iowa, of course, is normally the number one producer of corn in the nation, outproducing Illinois. Illinois, on the other hand, is normally the number one producer of soybeans. That crop appears to have gotten better since the beginning of the year. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out and what USDA begins to count up when it gets to the September report. And on the soybean front, as you were talking about the export market, that brings me to China, its relationship to Europe as well, the economic impact it does have, and whether or not they will take the total number of soybeans that is expected by USDA over the coming marketing year. Do you suppose, and I know we're running behind, that we can actually meet, and we're just about to start the marketing year, USDA's expectations for the coming year?
Well, I never underestimate how fast we can catch back up. There's no question. But it's going to take stability in China to do it. You know, China takes 70% of the world beans. And because of the record crops we've got in South America this year, we have more world beans available than what we had a year ago. And so I think that we have to be realistic. You saw the USDA drop export expectations last month. I don't know if they'll do that again this month, but they may. And so, you know, it's going to be the type of a year that's going to balance itself. Basically, it's going to be, the tipping point is going to be China, but also what's going on, you know, when you look at Europe. Eurozone GDP looks like it's going to be better, even though we had the Greece situation. But what all of Europe is experiencing right now that none of us can account for as to what the total impact will be is all the migrants. And even Greece had 17,000 people immigrate this week from an island, and you know, this is becoming a very terrifying situation. We here in the U.S. know how people have talked about having all the additional people that we've picked up over the last number of years and the impact it's having on the government and the cost of all of the services that are involved. Well, this is the same thing there, and so I think that ultimately, that will have a greater impact maybe than what we're anticipating at this point in time, and maybe it won't happen for another year or so, but it's in the background. And, you know, when you've got countries that are already having tough economic times, how do you handle having thousands and thousands and thousands of people come in? Even Germany, you know, has slowed down or capped the number of people that have been able to come in. It's starting to cause a lot of issues over there, you know, humanitarian issues, people complaining. All these people from Syria that are trying to get to Germany because Germany is considered to be a rich country, a great country to be able to have a family in. And, you know, now they've had to figure out, well, what are we going to do to stop this flood of people that are coming? And so I think that, you know, maybe for us as U.S. producers, sometimes it's hard for us to think about that having an impact on our prices, but it certainly can. The one good thing we've got going on is that oil is down, and at least that takes some pressure off of those countries that have to pay for oil based on U.S. dollars.
Jackie, our discussions are always interesting. I really thank you for taking the time with me today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's take a look at the agricultural news now for the afternoon. A federal judge late last week ruled the injunction blocking the Environmental Protection Agency's Waters of the U.S. rule only applies to the states included in the lawsuit. That means implementation can continue in 37 states across the country. Judge Ralph Erickson cited competing sovereign interest and competing judicial rulings. Erickson issued an injunction to block the implementation of the rule for 13 states on the 27th day of August. Four other courts have denied preliminary injunctions, two because they found they lacked subject matter jurisdiction. The other two courts deferred their decision until a judicial panel decides whether to consolidate all of the legal challenges to the Obama administration's rule. North Dakota is joined in the lawsuit by Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Idaho, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, South Dakota, Wyoming, and two New Mexico state agencies. Well, the National Farmers Union is calling on the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee to advance a multi-year tax extenders package similar to the one passed by the U.S. Senate Finance Committee in July. NFU President Roger Johnson sent a letter to the committee Tuesday saying, in this particular difficult period, our members require a predictable tax structure. Johnson noted over the last several years, Congress has approached the extension of valuable tax credits in an unpredictable way that has been unfriendly for family farmers and rural residents. Well, California will label Monsanto's Roundup herbicide as a product that is known to cause cancer. California environment officials issued a notice of intent to change the label last week, making the state the first to require such a label for Roundup. The label change follows a move by the International Agency for Research on Cancer classifying glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans earlier this year. Glyphosate is the main ingredient in Roundup. And finally, another herbicide issue. A Baylor University study concludes that atrazine does not appear to have long-term measurable impacts on aquatic plant life. Atrazine is a common herbicide used to control weeds in corn and sorghum crops and had caused a level of concern, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. The study's lead investigator, Ryan King, said this research is the first to address atrazine levels as they would naturally occur in agricultural areas during rainfall runoff events. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Farm income this year is going to be dramatically lower than in the past. Next year doesn't look any better, even on highly productive central Illinois soils. Farmers must cut costs to survive. And cash rents, they may need to come down by as much as $100 per acre. Let's start with this year's income from an acre of corn. Today, a central Illinois farmer that raises 200 bushel corn can expect, on average, to be paid $3.65 for each bushel. That's an income of $730 per acre, plus any government payments. Let's make it $800 even. These are the numbers being used by Gary Schnittke at the University of Illinois.
So we have $800 of revenue. We have been running $580 of non-land cost. And that would be everything from seed, fertilizer, chemicals, overhead, and then machinery-related costs, $550. That 200 bushel land would probably be running right at $300 an acre, so that would put us at $880 an acre. So roughly, if we want to have revenue at the same level as non or cost, we would have to have on cash rent acres a cost cut by $100 an acre, just to sort of be in the same ballpark of breaking even.
Cash rents on highly productive central Illinois soils, as the numbers stand today, need to come down sharply just so farmers can break even. There aren't really any other expenses where the costs can be cut.
We've already built in reductions for fuel cost, which, you know, if you look at halving of the fuel cost, it would be $10 an acre. So that's, you know, that's something, but not a lot. Fertilizer costs may come down some. We haven't seen new nitrogen, DAP, and potash bids yet for this year, but they may come down. There may be some pressure down, maybe $20 there. Seed is open question, but no one's predicting large cost cuts there. So overall, you know, if you can squeeze another $30 of non-land cost reductions out of there, you would be $30 of your $100 cost.
Just to break even next year on some of the best corn-producing farmland on the planet. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is on the phone line from the Andersons facility there in Indiana, outside of Logansport. That's their Clymers ethanol plant. Good afternoon to you, Stephen. Thanks for taking the time with us today. Tell me about crop conditions on the ground right now.
I mean, pretty much we're watching this thing around us locally die down pretty quickly. I mean, corn appears to be ready a lot sooner than we initially projected. And with the last week of 90-degree weather with minimal rainfall, a lot of leaves falling on the beans. So it's a start to harvest a little faster approaching than we initially thought.
How many days away do you suppose?
I would say full bore week probably around here locally.
Anybody taking indrows off, and what are they finding, if so?
Beans, early beans have went off, and locally has been yields very pleasing, for that matter, in the 55 to 60 range. Going to get our first report on about 150 acres of corn that'll be finished here this afternoon. Farmers certainly pleased with it as he's gotten into it from a test weight and moisture perspective. Not quite 100% sure what he's projecting for yield, but the front-end start to this thing has been more pleasing to folks than I think that they were initially expecting, especially on the bean yield.
I bet that surprises you and probably the management there at the grain elevator. If you had to rethink anything at this point?
Obviously, basis movement. It sure felt like getting into it in the initial stages and lower yields, we thought basis would creep. It looks like there's been a few more beans available for quick ship here and has kept basis relatively quiet, at least at the processor.
What are your expectations over the next week or so?
I think it sits pretty flat until we get full bore into this thing and find out exactly what value is attractive enough for the bushels to move from the field to the elevator in relation from the field to the farm. I think there's going to be a fine line we draw there is what value is attractive enough to intercept those bushels, because I think they move once, and if they move to the bin, it could be pretty stiff value to get them back out of the bin 2 months from now.
Take a look backwards 1 week for me to the lows in the crude oil market, and tell me how the ethanol plant fared through that process and whether your margins are good enough to continue to make profits.
Margins today, certainly good enough. Back a week ago, it was very tight because we were going through corn that essentially was in the high of the basis time. I mean, 30 to 35 over the September would have traded. Ownership was made on that. You drop crews that low, it was penny pushing, and we were flirting with some red ink there, no question. Today, ownership a little cheaper than that. Corn's continued to move, was just some guys throwing in the towel. Ahead of front-end new harvest, has kind of shaped things up a little better and has us with a positive outlook moving forward. But that last week definitely was a little bit of a head-turner.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 374. Cash beans, 863.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Stephen Linneber is with the Andersons. He's at their Climbers facility. That's outside of Logansport, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll take a complete look at the weather forecast at that point with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Some of the outside markets, just to bring you back up to speed on where they are. Crude oil, by the way, now at $44.40 a barrel, is down $1.52. And ethanol on the spread is $1.47 a barrel. That's just about half a cent higher for the afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. You'll also find our list of upcoming events. They include a couple of things. One of them next Monday evening at the Farm Credit Illinois building right here in Champaign County. That for an agricultural outlook. Check it out on our calendar at willag.org. You may already have an invite in your mail from Farm Credit. We're looking forward to doing that. That's at 6:30 on Monday of next week. Should be a good start to get yourself settled in for the harvest season. Back in just a couple of minutes again. This is Illinois Public Media.
It's hot dog day. The first recorded hot dog sausage as we know it today was eaten by the Greeks from at least 850 BC. But the idea of putting a hot dog on bread dates to 1880. By the way, baseball and hot dogs go back to at least 1893, when you could go to Sportsman's Park and catch a St. Louis Browns game and grab the newfangled hot dog. On this day in agricultural history in 1898, Waldo Seaman was born. An American chemical engineer, his technical leadership led to the discovery of three major new polymer families: thermoplastic polyurethane, synthetic natural rubber, and oil-resistant synthetic rubbers. In 1859, Thomas Nuttall died, an English naturalist and botanist. He collected and studied plants around the Chesapeake Bay area in the U.S. In 1913, the official route of the Lincoln Highway was announced. It was the first coast-to-coast highway running from New York to San Francisco. And in 2001, the first case of mad cow disease in Asian animals was reported in a dairy cow in Japan. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
On this Wednesday afternoon, let's take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, finally, a little relief from the heat has arrived. I don't think we've quite even made it to 80 degrees for a good portion of the day here in my part of the world.
That's right, and it's going to get cooler yet as we finish out this work week and head into the weekend. Temperatures in the Midwest will be only confined to the 60s and lower 70s for a couple of days. This will already begin to become fairly common on Friday afternoon. We'll actually see a little bit of this coolness already tomorrow afternoon in the uppermost parts of the Midwest. But for the bulk of the region, it'll be Friday, Saturday, maybe a little bit on Sunday, with temperatures starting to warm up thereafter. What's really interesting most of all is that not only will we be cool in the afternoons, but it's going to be nippy at night. The upper portions of the Midwest probably facing a little bit of patchy soft frost coming up here for Thursday night into Friday morning. And again, on Saturday morning, both of those days will probably have some temperatures in the middle and upper 30s across Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe parts of the eastern Dakota. So autumn is upon us. And the kind of heat we had this past weekend may not be seen again for quite some time.
Do you think that that quite some time will include any freezes?
Well, I think that there will be a handful of freezes that come into the uppermost Midwest, perhaps with this event on Friday and Saturday. But if there are temperatures that do come close to freezing, they're going to be limited to the northernmost parts of Minnesota and maybe some of the traditionally colder pockets in Wisconsin. And those areas really don't produce enough grain or oil seeds to make much of an issue. So this event will pass without a big issue. And we'll probably have to wait a good 10 days to maybe a couple weeks before I have another opportunity for cold to come this far south again. So this should be it for a little while.
Speaking of 10 days, once we get that far out, farmers across the United States, certainly in our part of the world, will be rolling full bore with the combines. What kind of conditions might they be working under, do you suppose?
Well, it looks to me like it's going to be mixed this fall. Certainly not perfect. It's not going to be dry for weeks on end. We are going to be dealing with some periods of rainfall. So timing the field process is going to be really important. Keeping an eye on radar on a daily basis is important. We'll probably have somewhat of a sluggish approach to the harvest season, and once we're in the midst of it, it might get a little frustrating in a few spots. But I don't want to paint this too much of a gloom and doom type deal, because I do think there'll be periods where we have a high pressure and control, and that should help us to get out there and work those fields in between storm systems successfully.
And before I let you go, could you turn your gaze southward for me?
Actually, it looks like it's going to be fairly good. Now, they too will run into increasing amounts of rain in southern Brazil as we go forward in time. Already we're seeing the first round of that occurring right now as we speak. As we go through these next few weeks, it will become progressively quite wet in southern Brazil. So there may be some wheat quality concerns, but more importantly, there will be some disruption to the planting of soybeans and early corn. I doubt seriously it'll have a huge impact.
Thanks for the update. Drew Drewlerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.